Hello and welcome to a TechWeb Internet Insider Profile. I'm Senior Editor Paul Schindler. Eric Raymond, the programmer of FetchMail, has become one of the most vocal proponents of open source development. He wrote a paper comparing proprietary and open development methodologies, The Cathedral and the Bazaar. This paper has become a manifesto for open source development, where a mob of programmers with literal centralization yields finished software. Raymond says such software is richer and more stable than any commercial software he's ever used. TechWeb Internet's David Sims talked to Raymond about the experiences that led him to write the paper.
Talking to Eric Raymond, and you're the author of a fairly influential paper on the net, published on the net, called The Cathedral and the Bazaar, about different software development methodologies. Could you tell us a little bit about that paper and what you're putting forward in it?
Well, the paper came out of my experience of utter, complete, and total shock when I first encountered Linux. At that time, I had been writing software for 15 years. I thought I understood the process fairly well, and I had absorbed all the classical software engineering truisms about keeping your project small, tightly defined objectives, sealing your developers away from the world, and all that sort of thing. And so, when I encountered Linux, I was utterly shocked because it turned all of the software development truisms on their heads. Here you had an operating system that was developed by a disconnected mob of around 40,000 programmers with almost nothing in the way of central management at all. Everything we learned from Fred Brooks and the N-squared law predicted that the result should have been completely awful, horrible, unusable, flaky, full of bugs.
Schlocky.
And yet, schlocky. And yet, when I tried it out, I immediately discerned that what I was looking at was in fact more featureful, more stable, superior in every way I could measure to any commercial operating system I had ever used. And I found this completely astonishing. And after I started running Linux in fall 1993, I spent 3 years trying to figure out what was going on. And when I figured out more or less what was going on, I decided, okay, now instead of just vaporing about theory, I'm going to run an experimental test now. So I then, there was a project that fell into my hands at that time, and I decided to run this project as a deliberate test of this theory, replicating the behaviors that I thought were important. And the experiment came up positive. That piece of software completely took over its ecological niche. And at that point, I figured I was onto something, and I wrote the paper.
What was that software?
It was a utility called FetchMail, which is used for remote mail retrieval, talking to POP and IMAP servers. And what it does is it will retrieve mail from an arbitrary collection of remote mail servers and merge that mail into your normal Unix mail stream, which means that connections to these servers look as though they're conventional push directory. They look like their conventional SMTP push delivery, even though what's really going on is this polling thing with POP and IMAP, but the user never has to see that anymore.
And when you say you replicated or you tried to replicate Linux's development methodology, you unleashed it on the internet, I'm assuming?
Well, the three key things that I did were, one, I sought the largest possible number of users and co-developers. The second thing that I did was I released early and I released often. And the third thing that I did was that I gave people ego reward. When they did good things, I told them that they'd done good things, and I said that they'd done good things in public, because the thing about the internet is you can't coerce people over a T1 line, so power relationships don't work, and there isn't really any scarcity economics. There's scarcity economics outside the internet that affects what people do, but on the internet itself there's no scarcity economics. So the only game left to play, the only thing that people really go after is sort of pure craftsmanship and reputation among peers. So if you can offer people the chance to do good work and be seen to do good work by their peers, that's a really powerful motivator. But in order to make that work, you have to be willing to reflect credit outwards and say nice things about people when they do good things. So that was point three. And then to repeat points one and two, seek as many developers as possible, because the basic insight of the paper was the more eyeballs you get, the shallower the bugs get. And release early and often, because that means that people get instant gratification. They get to see their work going back in, so they feel better about it. And also, bugs get found and fixed faster.
So the scarcity that you looked for was the scarcity of attention and reward, so to speak.
That's exactly correct. That's a very insightful way to put it, actually.
You've brought up another point, too, which is that part of what you're doing to proprietary companies is keeping them honest.
That's right.
Do you want to elaborate on that, say how you keep them honest?
We keep them honest, in the simplest possible way, by providing an alternative, which unless they bust their butts really hard, is going to be superior. And given the number of brains we can put on any given problem, it may turn out to be superior even if they bust their butts really hard. So that puts enormous pressure on them to be humble, it drives their prices down, and it puts pressure on them to be closer to the customer, because if they don't compete really, really effectively, we're going to eat their lunch.
Are you thinking of competing on quality or features or both?
All of the above.
What's the new paper that you've written that follows up on some of your thinking?
Well, I just finished writing Homesteading the Newosphere, and that's a paper that, again, anthropologically looks at the open source culture, the hacker culture, as I like to call it. I'm a hacker and proud, and no, that does not mean computer criminal, and if you think it does, go do your homework. And what I do in this paper is I look at some of the social and psychological mechanisms in the hacker culture that underlie the development of open source. I expand on this analysis of, well, if you don't have scarcity economics and you don't have power relationships, what's left? Well, what's left is the reputation game. So this paper is an analysis of the reputation game and how it's reflected in the customs that hackers have about who gets to modify source, who gets to redistribute source, and who's considered the official maintainer of something and why. And it turns out there's a lot of really rich and interesting structure there which reveals some surprising things.
Some of your research is probably based on the research project you did following on your discovery about Linux, I would imagine.
Well, part of the reason the Linux community is interesting is because I have been in open source communities before Linux, but Linux shows us an example of the open source dynamic in action that is both larger and, in a sense, purer than I've ever seen before in 20 years of developing software. So it's a really ideal laboratory to see how these mechanisms operate in practice.
You've been listening to a TechWeb Internet audio report. Thanks for listening.